B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Bell. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Star Market Garden Studios for another Bruins Toronto Maple Leafs Game 7. We got Big Jim Murray and Maz alongside. We'll be talking Bruins Leafs most of the day. We will have this topic most of the day. We are going to do a little marker toss with the Felger Maz Big Board coming up this hour and next. But other than that, we're all Toronto, Boston, and your thoughts and the thoughts of those of our experts. We'll hear from a voice from Toronto. We'll get a Toronto writer in here, Jack Edwards from Nesson. Is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour, which is a great get for Jimmy Stewart and us, because I think Jack hates us. But that's good. We got him in here. So he'll be joining us in the 4 o'clock hour. And this is what we're going to do all day. Murray, Maz, bunch of questions I'll just lead off for you and the people of Boston. The stakes today. What are the stakes tonight? Who's got more pressure? Who's got more at stake tonight?
I mean, I think it's the Leafs. I just look at the history of that franchise and what they built there now. They went out and got Tavares during the offseason. To me, I look at Toronto and I say, man, when is it coming? Like, how many moves, how many players can you get before you finally break through and not just win a cup? How about win a series? How about win a series? It's been 15 years, I think, since they won a playoff series.
That's correct, yes.
So that's absurd. I mean, when you talk about the level of talent on that roster – and the level of talent they have at forward in particular, you're going to get bounced in the first round again.
Yeah.
And after bringing in Babcock and everything else, like I just they've invested so much in that team to what? Get bounced again.
Yeah, that's why they exist, and that's why there's more pressure on the Bruins. No one is really going to be that surprised, and that includes Maple Leafs fans. If Toronto loses tonight, the Bruins were the second best team in the East. They had a monster season. They were as resilient as any team I can remember. Maybe since this year's Patriots team, but still, considering all the injuries and that they never really sank themselves. No, the expectations are high. The path is set. I think that they're a cup contending team and should get to the finals. This has been a more competitive series than I thought it would be. The stakes are higher for the Bruins because the path is set for them. And no one, I think, at their core really expects the Maple Leafs to come in here and actually win this game because of their tortured history.
Okay, you're both kind of wrong. The Maple Leafs have more pressure. I think that's obvious. More pressure. I mean, the Bruins, we love them, but they're the fourth team in town that tied for third. You know, no better than that. If they lose tonight, we'll be pissed. But when does training camp start for the Patriots? And they're on their way to the next championship. You know that. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, the Bruins will just reassume their place, third or fourth in town, and we'll turn our attention to the next championship run. No one's going to get fired. Is Bruce Cassidy going to get fired? Is Don Sweeney going to get fired?
Nope.
There'll be a few angry calls on our station.
Do you think people will treat this as meh? Like, on to the next thing?
Compared to Toronto, yeah.
Oh, this is a massive disappointment if the Bruins lose the series.
Compared to what happens in Toronto? What happens in Toronto, so there's more pressure in Toronto.
I mean, there is going to be hell to pay up there if they lose.
Babcock might lose his job. And I'll read you some of the coverage up there, Murray, just so you get a little bit of the tone of what's going on up there. That is, there's more pressure. But the Bruins have more at stake. The Bruins have more at stake because the window's tighter. This Toronto team is just starting. All right? It'll be another disappointment if they lose. They will catch a lot of grief up north, so there's a lot of pressure. But really? What is Austin Matthews? Is he 22? 23? How old is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Older than that.
How old is Mitch Marner? How old is Nylander? How old is Tavares, for that matter, isn't even that old. He's like 27. I'm going to guess 27. So that team, let's face it, on that Toronto team, it's really just a matter of time. They're going to break through eventually.
It's just,
yeah, I don't think that way, but go ahead.
Is it sooner or later? Well, I mean, if I'm that franchise, I'm still looking and saying we have our whole future ahead of us. Because they do. They have their whole future ahead of us. Their stars are all young, and they're all coming. And if they lose this year, well, they'll just be knocking at the door. And yes, maybe you give them a little bit of a choker label, whatever, but they're young. The Bruins, what's their window? When's the last chance? When is the next time the door is going to be this open for Chara, Bergeron, Krejci, Rask, Marchand, that older core? This could be it.
Yeah, it might be it. And I still
there's more at stake right here. There's more at stake for the Bruins.
I still say Toronto. At least those guys have won a cup. And like, you know, I understand Toronto's young, but what? We're going to look at the Leafs now and say, oh, they'll get one. They will? I mean, how many teams do we say that about that never get them? So I just don't think – I'm sorry. Like, you yourself have said they've played the better series.
Oh, yeah.
So now they're 3-3, game 7. They had game 6 at home and lost.
Oh, no.
I don't know. There's a lot at stake there.
I'm playing semantics with the words. There's more pressure up there, but there's more at stake. There's more to lose here.
So we agree on that.
This could be the last kick at the can for this group.
So that's true.
I mean, that's a lot.
And if they lose this, and say you watch Washington end up losing game 7 of Carolina, are you kidding me?
Right. And the whole thing is open for them. And hell, we had the owner on our show the day of the Winter Classic in Chicago talking about Bergeron's window, something that we don't even really talk about. But Charlie Jacobs did. So there's a window there. And this is, it's really opened up for him.
See, but I think you could say the same thing about the Leafs. Like, the path is open.
Except Bergeron's, and again, I'm guessing the ages. Like, I don't know off the top of my head. Bergeron is 32 and Austin Matthews is 22. Okay? And if I'm off a year or two, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
They are going to have more chances at it. There's no guarantee the Leafs ever break through. I'm just telling you. They've got their whole run ahead of them. They do. The Bruins are still in this transition spot where you've got this handful of guys from the last one, hopefully handing off to a handful of guys for the next one, but you don't even know. You don't even know there. And so I think the stakes for the Bruins are huge.
Yeah, I'm not telling you the stakes for the Bruins is zero, but those guys have one. They have one. If they didn't have one, I would completely 100% agree.
I understand what you're saying.
But they do. They've already got one.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's gravy, but in terms of the road, the path, I think both teams are saying the same thing.
What players have the most pressure?
I mean, to me, for the Bruins in this game, well, let me start here. I think the number one player, you know, and I'm leaving the goalies out on purpose, okay, because that's too easy. Like, it's always the goalies.
Of course.
Right? If you were to say to me right now which player in this game tonight is, I say Tavares. I'm sorry. You can't sign that contract, be a minus whatever he is in the series. And I don't have it in front of me at the moment.
He's minus three.
I mean, he's a minus player in the series. His only goal is an empty netter.
Right.
Okay. Like, he's done nothing. He's done nothing in the series.
Well, keep going.
Okay. So offensively, how about that?
Yeah. I mean, can't you say that he's neutralized Bergeron?
Yes. Yeah. But I would say, so that's fair. But is that what you're paying $77 million for, whatever the hell you're paying? Like, to me, it feels like I want more if I'm paying that kind of dough. So I look at Tavares and say, you are the new guy in. They beat the Leafs last year in 7. You're going to come in here and have the same thing happen again?
they will be
out there with freaking, you know, guillotines and all kinds of crap in Canada if this thing goes down the toilet there. Because, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. That franchise, to go as long as they have without a championship, make the moves that they've made, bring in him, and then blow a 3-2 lead, lose game 6 at home and lose game 7 in Boston.
Again, because of their history, it wouldn't be that big of a surprise. And for me, the pressure is on Bergeron and Pastrnak. Flip a coin, and probably the latter more than the former. But both of them have been, and I mean, really, Pastrnak's been almost a nothing in this complete series. I think, in my gut, I think this is going to be an excruciating, scoreless game into the third. They're going to need offense, and Pastrnak has to show up because he's been awful the last couple of games.
Let me ask you something. You took out the goalies, rightfully so. Don't you think if you included the goalies, Rask had the most on him going into the series?
Yes.
Just given...
Yes.
He's sort of in the crosshairs of fans. He's good goalie who's never quite delivered when it's mattered and really, you know, polarizing guy in town. Do you think he's kind of off the hook?
No.
Because he's had a good series.
He has, particularly the last couple of games. But no, because if he pukes on himself tonight, it all comes right back.
And I know the answer to that. I mean, you're right. If he pukes on himself tonight, it all comes back.
And you know what? I'll say the same about the other guy. He's played. I think he's been the best player in every game, you know, collectively.
The most consistent player in the series.
Absolutely.
Frederick Anderson.
That's the best way to say it. Correct. He has been the most consistent performer in this series on either team beginning to end. He has been good throughout. And if he poops his shorts tonight in Game 7 after losing last year here, don't you go, oh, my God. Again, if you're on the Leafs side, you look at it and say, you're going to play great for six games and then Game 7 come into the Boston Garden and take a crap at center ice. That's what you're going to do right in the blue paint. You were going to take a dump right in the blue paint at the TD Garden. Like, I think Rask would be number one on my list because we're here and we know the history and everything else. But, you know, if Anderson has a bad game, wow, are they eye rolling up there, too?
They are. With Rask, it's interesting because going into Game 7 last year, I was holding my breath on Rask because he did not have a good series against Toronto. Really, from start to end, he may have had one or two good games in there. But, hell, I remember here, Game 5, the Bruins are up 3-1. He got pulled and could have been pulled from Game 7. You know, one more, he probably was going to be. So Rask was really teetering, you know, so he was like on your list of what's he going to do. And I think he's sort of steadied himself this series. I think he's been, you know, I think he's been pretty good. I don't know if he's been great, but he's played winning hockey, I think, for the most part. So to me, he's kind of down my list. And should he be? You know, should I be a little more respectful of some of his collapses in the past? But I find Rask in an interesting spot. Is he one of the reasons you're going to win tonight or one of the reasons you're going to lose? Let me ask you about the coaches. Or, no, let me ask you this. In Toronto, if they lose, there's going to be a conversation about Babcock's job. There just is. Here in Boston, if they lose, who's going to get more grief? Is it going to fall on Bruce Cassidy or Don Sweeney?
Sweeney.
Why?
Because I think that if we, you know, if we're going to honestly assess it, where's this all going? Where's it going? You know, you run up against a good team 2 years in a row. You get, you know, Tampa Bay wipes you out last year, and then you lose to Toronto. And as you said, you look at the Toronto roster and say, whose roster would you rather have for the future, Toronto or Boston? So, and, you know, again,
that's not entirely Sweeney's fault with Toronto, you know, getting the number one overall pick.
Okay, I understand that, but the Bruins also had three picks in one draft and got one player.
Okay, fair enough.
So, and a lot of these young guys that have been hyped, what have they done? Frederick, Bjork, JFK. Like, you go right down the list. How many of those guys have really panned out? Now, look, a couple of them have. We like McAvoy. Carlos had a good year, and I thought had a good game the last game.
But you think we go to the GM?
I think we do, because I think we look at him, and I think we say, these young players they have aren't as good as they were billed to be. It'll be more Sweeney than Cassidy. I'm not saying Cassidy's a zero. He'll take some heat. But they have basically the best record, or second best record in the NHL since Cassidy took over as coach.
So that's what works against Cassidy, is I think he's been so good in the regular season. Does he get them to overachieve? In other words, they've been a top five team each of the last 2 years. Are they really a top five team?
No.
Or did he just coach them there?
He coached them there.
And so then when it comes to the playoffs and all that stuff sort of equals out, everyone gives the same effort and it becomes more about the talent. Their postseason isn't quite right their regular season, but is that just because the coach got them to a certain place in the regular season they didn't really belong to be in? That's something you ask on Cassidy. These are the stakes. Sounds like we're getting people in trouble for things they already haven't done yet, but that's what happens in Game 7. We start to project who effed up and why. We'll talk, and we'll do it with you. We're at the Garden all day long. Bruins, Leafs, Game 7. Your reaction right after this.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
From the center of the hockey universe, it's Felger and Mass. This is Bruins Game Day. Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
15 left. All season long, the Bruins have been resilient. All season long, the Boston Bruins have found a way. Tonight, trailing, heading into the third period, the Boston Bruins make it happen. The Bruins win it in Game 7. Victory 7-4 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Goodbye, Toronto. Hello, Tampa.
That's what happened last year. Bruins did it to the Leafs last year. A year ago, a year ago at this time, they win Game 7 to advance. We'll see what this year is. They did the same thing in 2013. All that experience, Maz, got to help the Bruins, right?
Well, you would think so, except, you know, again, I think that ends up being a little bit of a cliche. Like, you know, the whole, well, they've been there before. And, I don't know, a lot of those guys in Tampa had playoff experience, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think it, you know.
I mean, doesn't Toronto have experience now, too?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, I mean, just because you lose a close game doesn't mean that experience doesn't help you the next time.
Correct. Like, I think the experience thing gets overrated. I do. And so, you know, now a guy who's been around for 20 years, like you could say, you know, he doesn't get as amped up as another guy might. That might work against him. Sometimes it's good to play on the edge. Right. So, like, I think the experience thing gets overrated. I really do. I mean, I don't put a ton of stock in it. To me, it's about sort of who's motivated and who's focused and all of that. I believe that those are more important things.
As promised, to your thoughts. Mike in Salisbury, lead us off today.
Yeah, a couple points. I think the distinct advantage for the Bruins tonight, I don't know about you, but especially when a series gets this long, is the last change. I think that'll be a huge factor tonight. And also the just the history in general. The Leafs have been on Imodium AD since Sunday afternoon. There's no question about it.
So I think there is a self-fulfilling prophecy to teams that have, you know, we saw it with the Red Sox for years, like being that team. And Toronto's a little bit of that team. So I think that does work against them. Not necessarily for the specific player, but just sort of the pressures that just build on you. That becomes difficult. The last change, I'd like to think it really helps you, but I tell you, we've been through six games now, and I don't think that Cassie has been chasing matchups. I don't think he's, maybe to a fault, I don't think he's done it nearly enough of trying to get the right matchup. I think he's just sort of rolled it out there. Something tells me he's okay with Bergeron and Tavares playing to a standstill. And if you really look at it, maybe, you know, Bergeron's inched ahead. Tavares is a -3. Bergeron is a +1, I think, in the series. So maybe that has started to tilt in the Bruins' favor, which is what Cassie said after game one, that, you know, I'm not going to run from that matchup. Our players are good, and eventually it's going to tilt in our favor. Maybe it started to. Because I don't think that he's done much to dictate matchups at all, home or the road. So I don't know what that final change is going to do.
Well, look, that whole final change thing, again, the road team has won 4 of the 6 games in this series. So, like, you know, no matter what happens, the road team will have won more games than the home team in this series when it's all over. So, like, I just think that, I don't know, we like to put these little labels on this sort of stuff and say, this is the key, that's the key. And the reality is, you got to show up and outwork the other guy. And you got to take advantage of your opportunities. And even then, sometimes it's not enough, right? The year they won the cup, correct me if I'm wrong, the game against Montreal here, game 7, the Canadiens shot a puck that went off Chara's skate and kicked wide. Otherwise, they go, yes. Right? The Bruins get it at the other end when Horton scores, and that's that. Like, you know, it can really be that minimal a thing, which is always the danger when you get into these games.
Pat in Boston. Go ahead, Pat.
All right, Mike. Two quick points, if you give me the time. I don't know if you boys saw the story in NBC Sports Boston about the Bruins complaining to the series supervisor about the Toronto tripping scenario going on. So I want to see what – I know Babcock did it last year, and you can tell he did it again this year with Bergeron on the faceoff because he's been getting kicked out. It's noticeable, especially last year and this year too. So I wonder if the Bruins got a couple tripping calls coming to them tonight. And then I think the most important player for the Bruins tonight, and I saw this stat that the other day, when Brad Marchand scores in the playoffs, his whole career with the Bruins, they're 20-1 in these games that he scores a goal in. So I think we need a big night from him if we want to get to the next round.
Okay, babe, that slew footing thing, part of me says, you know, stop whining. You know, are we crying about the refs? I hate that. But then again, it's playoffs and it's gamesmanship and it's, you know, it's you're trying to set up the refs, and every coach does it. And he might be right. I mean, they feels like some of the examples that I've seen, Toronto's, you know, sort of kicking in the back of the skates and you're going out. So Cassie's doing his job. So half of me says that's the coach's job and he's doing it. The other half says quit crying. So I
think that part of it's going to come out in the wash tonight. And look, I looked up some of this stuff this morning in terms of game sevens, and it looks like historically you're going to get a few calls aside. That's it. Three power plays a team, maybe one a period, three or four. I wouldn't expect a game with six. I wouldn't expect a game with one. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. You might get a power play per period, and that's it.
Don't you want the power plays this year?
Yes, and I'll tell you what. See, now, if you were to say to me...
I mean, this is why the Bruins are in the series, is the freaking power play.
Okay, and yet, when I was just looking at it now quickly, if I'm not mistaken, and I still group Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak together. Okay, those three guys, when they have produced an even strength goal, the Bruins have won in this series.
No matter where they're skating.
Correct. I think the only game that they scored and didn't win was game one, and that was a power play goal. Mm-hmm. Right? That was Bergeron, the first goal of the series. But other than that, if they've produced even strength in this series, the Bruins have won every game. 2-4-6. And the other games, they haven't produced at all. So now, that's not a singular player. Pasternak has moved around, but the bottom line is there is something to be said for that whole theory of if your best players produce and their best, or your best players outproduce their best players, you'll win.
Well, that's the way the series is going.
I think so.
No question about it, but the power play is also why the Bruins are in the thing. Last two games, they've won on the power play. Smitty and Woburn, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think regardless of the outcome of tonight's game, this whole rivalry thing the NHL wanted with the playoffs is going to work out, at least with the Bruins and the Maple Leafs. Regardless of the outcome, these teams are going to want each other's heads next year, and it looks like that already. Thanks, guys.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Kadri and DeBrusque have to go next year. Got to go. Got to settle that on the ice. You can't be chirping and cheap-shotting and doing all this stuff now and then have, what is it, four games against each other next year and do nothing. Those two have to settle that on the
ice. It does feel that way.
Oh,
right?
They have to. I'm sorry. They simply have to go next year.
I mean, and that's another one that if you're Toronto and they lose this series, boy, you're going to revisit that one. That ended up costing you five games. Five. You know, it was a max of five, and everyone thought it was going to be a six-game series. At least most of us thought seven going in, including the players and the coaches, by the way. Based on what they've said the last couple of days, they almost all knew it was coming to this. So now you don't have Kadri for five of those seven, and you're going to lose because he's dumb enough to do the same thing he did a year ago? That's another one they won't live down.
John in Sarasota. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Been hearing about Babcock's on the hot seat. They paid him a boatload of money to teach young talent there how to win. You can't underestimate that guy. He could come out for the first intermission entertainment and take a dump on the ice, and he's not getting fired. He's there for the long term. And once Toronto learns how to win, they're going to be on top for years. So it's a great chance for the Bruins. Enjoy the show, guys.
Well, so, okay, John, thanks. So this is what I'm saying. Toronto really does have their whole run ahead of them. They do. The ages of their guys and how they're building it. And Babcock wasn't – I mean, was he brought in there to teach young guys how to win, or was he – I mean, yes, obviously. But and that's sort of like a cliche. He was brought in to coach up a really young team and sort of bring them along. And he's done that. He's brought along a really young team and coached them up. Now, they've come up short in the postseason, and he hasn't taught them how to, quote-unquote, win these playoff series. But I think big picture, he's sort of done his job. Just because you're drafting up there is no guarantee. Edmonton did it for years, and they had one playoff run, and that's it. They've sucked otherwise. Buffalo hasn't figured it out. There's a lot of teams that draft up there consistently and never figure it out. Babcock's got them, you know, to be a perennial playoff team and contender. They haven't pushed through. But they're getting antsy up there. They're getting antsy for that first playoff win.
Well, and with good reason. Again, you know, up front, they're loaded. They are freaking loaded up front. And, you know, Riley's had a good series, right? They went into the series thinking they had the best defenseman in the series, and he's played like it. I mean, he's really probably been the best defenseman on the ice in the six games.
Offensively anyway, for sure.
Right. And then their goalies played well. So, like, if you were to look at them and say, well, the deficiencies on the back end, they've done well there. And they're still going to game seven? I'm telling you, up there, because we've lived it here, we know. They are crapping their pants up there today.
Let me tell you.
They are crapping huge craps up there. Huge.
Okay. let me tell you the difference between the two teams in terms of where their leadership comes and sort of the tone comes. There's a big difference between the two teams. I want to get to that right after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere. It's Felger and Maz from the Garden.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Broadcasting live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, it's Felger and Maz. Bruins game day on your home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Experience matters. Again, I think it's still about effort and execution. I don't doubt either team will lack effort. I thought our execution was excellent yesterday, particularly in our breakouts. We were much more assertive with our forecheck, discipline, power play, obviously recovered pucks, penalty kill, got the clears. So I think it comes down to execution as much as anything. And what, you know, why do you execute some days better than others? Could be nerves tomorrow. Hopefully they're gone in a hurry for our younger guys. I imagine everybody would be a little bit, have some level of butterflies, even the older guys. But once the puck drops, they've been there. And let's hope it helps us.
Okay, the guys that have quote-unquote been there, you think that's overrated, Maz? And I don't have the numbers on Toronto. I just know all the Bruins players, you know. There's a half dozen players on the Bruins who've won a Stanley Cup, for crying out loud.
Right.
Been through many, many Game 7s, have been in this spot. Toronto, I don't know how many. Muzzin won a cup with the Kings. Tavares had some playoff rounds with the Islanders. But I don't know, other than that, where they stack up. But we do know Boston has a lot of experience in this spot. You think that's overrated?
I do. I generally think experience is overrated in most sports, because I just think sometimes it's got more to do with, you know, your character and who you are. Some guys make the playoffs every year and they just can't perform well.
Eagles, Patriots, Super Bowl 2 years ago?
Bingo. Yeah, bingo. Some guys are just wired in a way that they can handle it, have the mental toughness to handle it, and are able to go out there and play freely and not worry about making the mistakes because they trust themselves.
Whether they've been there or not.
Right. I just think, that, you know, so again, I suppose in a lot of ways, I'm not telling you the experience hurts, because I don't think it hurts, unless you lose all the time and then all of a sudden it can be a real detriment, you know, because you get behind and you're like, here we go again. So, I just think we overplay it. And I think it just sometimes comes down to the ability to keep going no matter what.
So, the Bruins have a ton of history in Game 7. Let me give you some individual players. And you're going to see that they have a ton of history in Game 7. But it's not all great. Or it's, you know, it's at least middling. I mean, I don't know where we don't have the simulcast up, so I'm not sure where Vinny's going to start. But Tuukka Rask, for example, has 4 Game 7s already. He's had 4 Game 7s. He's 2-2 in the previous 4 with a 3.72 goals against. Oof. And an .845 save percentage.
Oh, that, God.
That's brutal.
That blows.
That is. That's brutal.
That sucks. You know, his two wins were both mediocre games against this Toronto team that gagged in the third period of both. So, and the two losses were to Montreal a couple of years ago when they won the President's Trophy in 2014 and Philly in 2010 when they gagged away a 3-goal lead. You can make the claim that Tuukka Rask has never played well in a Game 7. And this is part of the reason why fans are leery of him. I think you can make the case he's never had a good Game 7. He's 2-2 with a 3.72 goals against and an .845 save percentage. And that, I don't need to tell you, freaking blows.
Those numbers are horrid.
I thought that save percentage was going to be around 880, 885 at worst. 840 what? What was it?
Okay, so he's got experience, but it's not good experience. Patrice Bergeron has played 10 Game 7s. That's great to have a guy who's been here 10 times, except he's 5-5. He's 5-5 in those games. You know, he and his team has come through as much as he's not come through. And maybe that, you know, I don't know. if I pulled up Jonathan Taves' numbers in Game 7, I think they'd be better, but maybe they're not. I don't know. Maybe that's just the nature of playoff hockey, and all these guys are going to be right around 500 in these Game 7s because they're coin tosses. They're all coin tosses.
I mean, that's what I think. I think, generally speaking, assuming the rosters are relatively even, like, you know, for example, if you were to tell me that Carolina-Washington, I like Washington in that game.
Have to like Washington.
Okay, like, then. Okay, so.
Have you seen, by the way, what Ovechkin has done to Doug Hamilton in that series?
Oh, no. Yeah. Dude, I saw him turtle the other night in Game 5.
Doug Hamilton may not have a penis. He may not. And this is another one. All you local hockey writers who had to pump my skirt when they traded Doug Hamilton, I said, no big deal. This guy's not going to amount to anything. He doesn't have the makeup to be a high-end defenseman. And DJ Bean and the rest of these guys, Doug Hamilton. If you have a second, folks, just catch up online how Doug Hamilton has completely tucked his junk, primarily against Alex Ovechkin, but really in that whole series. It's freaking embarrassing what Doug Hamilton has done in that series. I'm sorry. Anyway. But just continue. So this will be Bergeron's 11th Game 7. Crap, that's a lot.
See, so, and you know what? He's a great example, though, before you go on. Is there anybody you trust more?
No.
And he's 5-5.
Right, exactly right.
So, like, that is, you know, that's about what these Game 7s are, but keep going.
So Krejci, I trust. Krejci has had 9 of these. He's 5-4. He hasn't scored in the 9 games, but he's 8 assists, so he's got, you know, almost a point a game in his 9 Game 7s. But then again, 5 of the 8 came in the 2 Game 7s versus Toronto. So it's like, if it wasn't for this Toronto team, the Bruins in Game 7, their track record would not be so great. The Leafs have almost single-handedly brought them back to square in these Game 7s. Someone who has had good success is Brad Marchand. So this will be his 8th Game 7. He's 5-2 in his previous 7. Okay, so he does have a good track record here. He's got 7 points in those 7 games, 3 goals. But again, 3 goals were in the 2 games against Toronto. No, not for this Toronto team, man. And we don't have Chara's numbers broken out. He's probably had the most. So here's the difference. I tease the difference between the way the Bruins are led and the Leafs are led. When the Bruins are in the room in between periods, the players can talk. And the players can. And you know what? We have guys who talk about. Jimmy, play Jake DeBrusk for me from the other day.
I think for a reason they have such high character. We always talk about it, and it kind of sounds cliche at this point, but it's really true. And, you know, those guys have a calming effect. And said a couple words in the intermission, I remember last year, and, you know, everyone was on board. We all believed, and, you know, just followed those guys' lead, and they got us the win.
So when they get into the period break and they're down a goal going into the third period, it's Chara, it's Bergeron, it's Krejci, it's Marchand. As opposed to the coach in Toronto when they're between the periods, if it's not Jake Muzzin, I don't know who stands up. Again, Tavares, I can't remember his track record. I don't feel like he had a ton of, you know, winning experience on the island. They made the playoffs, but did he advance far ever? I can't really remember.
They had 1 year where they made a little run. 1 year, but it might have only been into the second round even. Like, I'll go back and check, but not really. I don't think, I mean, he's never been in the final.
So if it's not Muzzin, it's Babcock. It's Babcock who stands up, and it's Babcock, and I think it's much more valuable if it's on the bench among the players, and I think that should play to the Bruins' advantage. How about, Jimmy, just play me the Bergeron cut on playoff experience.
It's great. I mean, that's why you play hockey. That's why you're, as an athlete, I think you have to feed off of that, and I think we all enjoy them, and it's fun to be a part of.
It's not the cut. It was the one about experience.
Yeah, I think as a team, you know, obviously the experience helps for sure. You know, being able to visualize in your head the things you've been through and how to manage and handle that is definitely something that you can use.
It should be.
You would think, right? Because, again, you can, you know, let's say the circumstances get a little dire. You know, they can look at one another and say, hey, you know, remember 2013. Right? And everyone knows what they're talking about. And so we came back 4-1 10 minutes ago. We can do it again. So there is a, you know, I just think that maybe there's more resiliency there when you get into that sort of circumstance. But the numbers you read on Rask, oh boy, those now those scare me.
Those were sobering. Jimmy, just give me Chara going into Game 7, please.
Yeah, it's exciting. Game 7, you know. So what do you play for, you know, everything online?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good point, like, because Cassidy has asked repeatedly about getting the team ready. And he says, I'm going to leave that to our players.
Yes, exactly.
And so, and really, from his standpoint, it's a smart move.
Toronto can't do that.
Well, no, they can't. But neither can Cassidy, right? So, like, it's not like Cassidy can say to his team, this is how you do it. Because then they look at him and say, what the hell are you talking about? So he's smart enough to get out of the way. Right? No. I'm going to let Chara and Bergeron and those guys handle that part of it because they've been through it, and it'll resonate more with the guys in the room if it comes from them anyway.
Okay, long commercial-free segment is next. We've got to do some marker tossing. We've got the Felger and Maz big board. We're going to do a couple secondary positions. We got corners and safeties coming up next. We'll chuck the markers next to get back to your Bruins calls off the top of the three. Either way, when we're after this commercial break, we take no commercials for 20 minutes, so it's a great time to stick around.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day with Felger and Maz from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
From the center of the hockey universe, this is Bruins Game Day, live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Oop, got the one right on the bottom.
It's all right, you got one.
I got one.
Jake Biquette from Arkansas.
Okay.
If they pick a Z receiver, it's going to be Aaron Dobson out of Marshall.
With the 59th pick in the 2013 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select Aaron Dobson, wide receiver, Marshall.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, wow!
What does that mean, Maz? Is that good or is that bad?
Oh, I heard rumors about him.
What kind of rumors?
That he was on their radar.
With the 67th pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, your New England and my New England Patriots select Jimmy Garoppolo.
Trey Flowers out of Arkansas.
Number 101 overall, the New England Patriots select Trey Flowers, defensive end from Arkansas.
God!
Cyrus Jones from Alabama.
Oh, Nick Saban connection.
He's projected as a fourth-round pick.
With the 60th selection, the New England Patriots select Cyrus Jones.
Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, God.
North Carolina State projects as a fourth-round pick.
If his name's Jacoby, he's soft.
That guy has no shot.
The New England Patriots here at number 91, Jacoby Brissett, a quarterback.
Isaiah Wynn from Georgia.
With the 23rd pick, the New England Patriots select Isaiah Wynn, tackle, Georgia.
All right, the uncanny accuracy of the Felger and Maz Big Board continues. The Felger and Maz Big Board is brought to you by the Peterson School. The best in the trades are drafted from the Peterson School. PetersonSchool.com. This is how we do our pre-draft analysis. We chuck markers. And a draft magazine, the Pro Football Weekly 2019 Draft Guide. Yesterday, we did offensive and defensive linemen, the big fatties. What are you laughing at already, Miz?
No, because the picture of that guy on the top, he's got very short arms.
Well, so here's what we got. And if you, this is very ghetto. If we're looking at the NBC Sports the NBC Sports Boston simulcast. I've already started to cut and paste. Our selection's already on the big board. I know my spatial ability is going to screw up at some point. This thing is going to be like a complete disaster at some point. But here are our offensive and defensive linemen. We'll actually post this online so you can follow along. Offensive guard prospects I like. We hit two guys from Wisconsin. Michael Dieter and Bo Benschwazel. I'd watch those guys on the inside. Why are you laughing already,
Matt? Just the pictures again. The guy on top. That guy's body doesn't look right. That guy doesn't look like an NFL player.
Defensive tackle. We hit on Ed Oliver from Houston. His arms are a little short.
Big time.
Okay, so that's a big board. We'll post this so you can follow along. Today we're doing corners and safeties. Okay, so
I'm in.
Six names. We got to go quick. I'm going to turn it around now. The draft guide is exposed. Maz is going to chuck a football at it with the marker inside. You just
hold
go.
It,
go.
All right, here comes Maz's throw.
Nice.
It's a black mark on the side
of the board. Okay, I got it. Here we go. Mac Wilson. Mac Wilson from Alabama. He's projected in the third round. Strong points, good size, and very long arms.
Plays
with strength and power, reacts well, and finds the ball. His weak points, only a one-year starter. which is, well, fairly typical at Alabama, they say.
It's a project.
Not as physical as some Alabama linebacker. Oh, this is linebacker. This is my fault. Okay, you know what? But that's going to count. We're doing linebackers later. Mack Wilson's a linebacker. That's for the linebacker thing coming up. Okay, that's my fault. I opened up to the wrong page. I got ahead of myself. But that one's going to stand on the board, okay?
Ooh, that's a sign from the football gods.
Okay, I'm sorry. So that's my operator error, my fault. Murray throws like a broad if you're watching for the first time out there on the simulcast. Corners, hit corners.
Ooh, good job.
Okay, that feels like it hit something.
Yep. Right
down there. Oh, the names are great. Jojuan. J-O-E-J-U-A-N. Jojuan Williams from Vanderbilt.
I think it's Jawan.
Looks like it's Jojuan. Williams, he's from Vanderbilt, projected in the first to second round. Strong points, very big corner with height and length. Quickness of a much smaller man. Changes direction in a heartbeat and has good suddenness.
Sounds like Razai Dowling.
I like suddenness.
I didn't know suddenness was an attribute.
Weak points. Limited experience playing off and zone coverage. Occasionally fails to get his head turned, okay? But we're going to put Joe.
If he doesn't turn his head, he's perfect for the Patriots.
Jojuan Williams, put him on the board. I'm going to go right to the second and third page here of the corners because we'll have more options. Maz is now going to shoot. We say corners a position of need?
Not really, no. Yeah,
medium, right? Go ahead, yeah. Maz.
Here you go, pink.
Yeah.
Oh, you almost got his finger, too.
Yep.
Damn.
Almost got me. Okay. I'm going to assume this
top
was...
Top right. It was the like up by the...
Oh, I see it. Thank you. Yeah. Very good.
Oh, yes.
Amani Orurari. Amani Orurari.
You sound like a dog.
You pronounce this. O-R-U-W-A-R-I-Y-E.
Uruwari.
Uruwari. He's projected in the fourth round, right to the weak points. Lean frame. Must add strength and bulk. Struggles when taking on blocks, often getting overpowered. More of a grab tackler than a face-up hitter. Misses too many tackles. He's a corner. How does he cover?
No shot. If he can't tackle, he's not coming here.
Okay. He was a fifth-year senior, if that matters to anyone. Put him on the board. Orurari is on the board.
Dumb when he can't tackle.
Out of Penn State, and who the hell is going to pronounce that name? Okay, give me one more corner, man, and then we'll go to safeties. Murray, go.
All right.
Bottom right.
Yeah, bottom right.
Yep. In the corner.
Bottom right. Okay.
Another tough name, I hope.
Yeah, let's go Montre Hartage. Montre Hartage of Northwestern. Senior, 5'11", 187, adequate size, more quick than fast, tough and makes plays, okay? He's projected to go, he's sort of best of the rest, so he's sort of a tweener, may not even get drafted.
Sounds like a seventh rounder.
Either way, we're going to put him on the board.
Yes!
Okay, couple safeties, here we go, Maz.
Okay, here we go.
Please fire away at will, thank you.
Love the safeties.
Oh!
Bottom left.
That got me on the top of the head a little bit. Okay, well, this is the number one safety on the board. Deontay Thompson from Alabama.
Yeah, no shot.
No shot. Is he long gone?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
But who knows? Crazy things can happen.
Okay, so strong points. Coveted size and length. Very good athlete with speed and range. Is safety a position in need?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say yes.
Absolutely,
yes.
It's a position
Yeah, you're
in need.
Getting a little long in the tooth there. McCourty, Chung, absolutely.
I'd be happy for a safety in the first round. Coveted size and length, very good athlete with speed and range, instinctive, keeps plays in front of him, solid in zone, and does a good, if not great, job when asked to play man. Stays low in his pedal.
Ooh, love that.
And has a smooth turn. Okay? Weak points, more of a hitter than a wrap-up tackler who will miss some opportunities. Not a burner. Plays to about a 4.5 speed, only 1 year as a full-time starter.
It's all right. He's going to be way back there anyway.
Okay, now Murray has pulled out his wrist rocket, which is...
My dad bought it for a reason. I got to use this.
Again, we feel it may not quite be legal in the state of Massachusetts, but don't tell anybody that. But he throws like such a chick, he's got to use the wrist rocket to get it there. Go ahead, Murray.
Okay, Murray, here you go. Oh, that is brilliant. Look at that, Mark. Look at that.
That does. Okay, this is going to
be... Wow, that looks like a Rorschach test.
Nazer Adderley from Delaware. okay? Weak points, right to the weak points. Level of competition and didn't consistently dominate at the FCS. Good hitter, but not overly physical. Misses some tackles. Corner experience is a plus, but not asked to play a lot of man coverage last season.
Versatile.
They gave him a grade of B. His height is 5'11 and three quarters, weight 195. He's projected to go in the third round. Okay? That sounds like their kind of guy.
Patriots love the B players.
B player, middling prospect from frickin' Delaware.
You get 80% of the player and 50% of the cost.
Projected to go in the third. They'll draft him late in the first, something like that.
Are we doing another?
Final safety prospect, and then we'll get back to the Bruins. Go ahead.
We're going back to the black market.
Go ahead, Maz.
Oh,
you did get his finger.
Murray's just rooting for me to get plunked. Okay, let's go.
Top right.
Yeah, well, it's this is like the audible section. It's not even like they just list a bunch of guys in paragraph form. That doesn't make – no, that's – no.
I'll throw again.
No, Mike Bell, Fresno State. Mike Bell, Fresno State was the real closest one. He's projected in the seventh round or an undrafted free agent. He's got size and ball skills. He's a 6'2", 200. That is good size. Zone awareness and a two-year starter. The weak points, he's big, but he doesn't play to his size. Lacks strength and pop.
Average, we can fix that.
Has only average speed and range. Mike Bell, Fresno State. Put him on the board. We'll do linebackers this hour, but back to your Bruins calls after 90 seconds. What is so funny? You're just laughing over there, Maz.
The whole thing just cracked.
Come
me
on.
Up.
This is scientific.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.